Well, I'm really happy to be here. It's super fun to speak. It's really enjoyable. So I just want you to know I'm having fun up here. It's really fun. And speaking's really fun. I think only one thing that I find really hard about it is that for the past like 2 weeks, all I've been thinking about is kindness, which I guess isn't really a bad thing. But it's been kind of just going through my mind, like, kindness. What is kindness? And listening to the messages over the past 2 weeks, if you've been here, we've been doing a sermon series on the conspiracy of kindness and what that is. And just been talking about different biblical examples of this and just kind of dissecting what it means to have a Christ-like attitude or to be kind. And so I get to talk today about kindness, but I couldn't help, you know, over the past couple weeks as I was thinking about this, what does the world think about kindness? You know, so the easiest thing to do is just type it in on Google and bam. You know, the world. Look, what is kindness to the world? What is kindness? You know, it's this big word. It's kind of vague. It can mean a lot of things, and maybe it means something different for you. But after I started looking at kindness, I kind of realized, you know, doing some self analysis and kind of realizing maybe I don't know if I'm the kindest person out there, or maybe I'm really kindness isn't just it's not really my strongest attribute. And you know, and I'm not upset about that, but I'm just realizing maybe I'm not the kindest person in the world. But you know, my wife's really kind, and so she makes up for that difference. Like for one time, somebody gave us a gift card to a restaurant, and so we went out to the restaurant and we bought our meals, and the gift card paid for everything, and we had a couple dollars left over. And my first instinct was, man, is there any dessert on this menu? So I started looking at it. Katie's like, why don't we give it to somebody else? I'm like, oh, well, that's probably the kinder thing to do. I'm not opposed to being kind. I mean, of course, like, I want to be kind. It's just not my first instinct. But there's so many different forms of kindness. You know, maybe we think about kindness, like, I think I was making a mistake in looking at myself because I was thinking that I had to be kind. Kindness is a certain thing, and if I'm not doing that certain thing, then I must not be very kind. But I think it was bigger than that. I found this, you know, when you Google kindness, there is a lot out there. There are videos, there's really cool videos people made. There's organizations, there's movements, there's science. People have studied kindness and done massive research on the effects of kindness in society and physically, the effects of kindness on our bodies, and all kinds of really interesting stuff. And it was kind of hard to pick the stuff that I found really interesting. But there was one organization I found, just Random Acts of Kindness is what it's called, and they have these different forms of kindness. And I was just going to go over a couple of them because I found them, it helped me realize, you know, even though I may not be kind in that way, there's other attributes of kindness that I do enjoy doing. So one form of kindness that we generally think about is being helpful or serving people or just noticing when something needs to be done, or, you know, mopping the floor or whatever, doing the dishes or caring for somebody, carrying somebody, walking across the street with somebody. That's helpfulness, you know, and that's a general form of kindness that we think about. There's also, like, compassion. So maybe seeing somebody and noticing that they're not in the best mood or they're having a tough time and wanting to talk to them and encourage them. I think that's another form of kindness. Respect, maybe just respecting people or respecting places and treating them with the honor that they deserve. That could go along with, you know, not littering or, I don't know, all kinds of different types of respect is a form of kindness. Being fair, treating people with equal importance. Being grateful. I think being grateful is an interesting form of kindness. It's just appreciating things that are done for you. So if somebody does something for you, you're just very grateful and just noticing that that person went out of their way for you. I mean, that's kind of weird because it's like you're not the one being kind, but you can at least show that other person that you appreciate their kindness. That's an interesting form of kindness. Integrity, maybe doing the right thing when nobody will ever know that you did the right thing, or maybe doing the right thing when, in the long run, you don't know if it'll even matter, but you're still going to do the right thing. That's an interesting form of kindness. Responsibility, maybe just, you know, saying you're going to do something or Or, if you're going to school, or if you have a responsibility, following through in that responsibility and not giving up. That's an interesting form of kindness. A couple more. These are interesting. Assertiveness. And these are from that website. I'm not making, this isn't mine, but I thought these were interesting. Assertiveness. So knowing what you believe, standing up for what you believe, while also respecting the beliefs and the right of others. That's a really touchy form of kindness, but it's a really important one. Self-discipline. So I think that kind of goes along with just controlling your actions, maybe not allowing yourself to lose control or say something that you don't mean or do something that you didn't mean to do. Self-discipline. Perseverance. Even when things get difficult, you're not going to give up. Just continuing to believe and to push through and finish, kind of along with the responsibility. And the last one that I think is really interesting is it's called self-care. And this one's interesting because it's kind of like, I think we sometimes lose track of this. Self-care, to mentally and physically, emotionally caring for yourself. An example I like to use for this is, let's say I invited a friend over to my house. And that friend came over and I let him in. I'm like, hey, do you want to come over? And they come over and then they come in and they're just coughing and sneezing and maybe they're like, looks like they fell in a mud puddle and they're really tired. And I'm like, I let him in and I'm like, whoa, man, like, what's wrong with you? And they're like, I don't know, I just, busy day and I don't feel well, but I just wanted to come over and hang out with you. I'm like, oh, you know, I really appreciate that, but honestly, maybe you should care for yourself before you come and hang out with me. I think you got some bigger issues, you know, maybe you should take a shower and get some rest or something. The reason I use that example is because sometimes we think that we kind of ignore necessarily our own health because we think we need to be there for somebody else. And we're going to kind of come back to that towards the end of this message, but self-care, you know, noticing, you know, you got to think about yourself sometimes and not necessarily feel like you got to go serve somebody else. But so we're going to be looking at a biblical example of this. We've been looking at different stories throughout the Bible, and we're going to be looking at John 13 as a story of Jesus with his 12 disciples. And this story kind of comes in line later in Jesus' ministry. He was towards the end of his ministry, and he's hanging out with his 12 friends, and they'd been through a lot at this point. They've been through so much. Jesus has taught and healed people, raised people from the dead. He's walked on water. I mean, they have been through a lot together. And Jesus loves his friends. He really loves them. And they spend so much time together. I feel like they spent every day together. Like, these were close friends. And this story, we're jumping in, it's basically the last meal that they get to eat together. It's the Last Supper. It's the night before Jesus ends up getting killed. And so we're going to jump in right there. We're going to read that. So I'm reading John 13, verses 1 through 17. So I'm just going to go ahead and read that, and then we're going to kind of pull some stuff out of that. So if you would follow along with me in John 13, I can read it with you. Just before the Passover feast, Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and to go to the Father. Having loved his dear companions, he continued to love them right to the end. It was supper time. The devil had now Judas, son of Simon the Iscariot, firmly in his grip and all set for the betrayal. Jesus knew that the Father had put him in complete charge of everything, that he had come from God and that he was on his way back to God. So he got up from the supper table, set aside his robe, put on an apron, and then he poured some water into a basin and began to wash the feet of the disciples, drying them with his apron. When he got to Simon Peter, Peter said, Master, you wash my feet? And Jesus answered, You don't understand now what I'm doing, Peter, but it will be clear to you later. But Peter persisted, You're not going to wash my feet, Jesus, never. And Jesus said, Peter, if I don't wash you, you can have no part of what I'm doing. So Peter said, Master, not only my feet then, wash my hands, wash my head. But Jesus says, if you had a bath this morning, you only need your feet washed, and now you're clean from head to toe. My concern, you understand, is holiness, not hygiene. So now you are clean, but not every one of you. After he had finished washing their feet, he took his robe back and went back at his place at the table. Then he said, "Do you understand what I've done for you? You address me as teacher and master, and that is right. That is what I am. So if I am the master and teacher, wash your feet. You must now wash each other's feet. I've laid down a pattern for you. What I've done, you do. I'm only pointing out the obvious. A servant is not ranked above his master. An employee doesn't give orders to the employer. If you understand what I'm telling you, act like it and live a blessed life." So maybe you've heard this story. I'm sure you have. Maybe not. But maybe the idea of foot washing is a very strange concept to you. And it should be, because honestly, our culture has no example of what this was like for them. It was actually a very common thing to do. You know, they didn't have cars, so when they walked everywhere in this hot climate, not like our climate, they didn't wear shoes, they wore sandals. And so as they walked and as they traveled, they became very dirty. And when they would go into someone's house, it was very common practice for the servant of the house to have a bowl there and to just gently wash the feet as the visitors would come in so they wouldn't track all the dirt into the house. So Jesus doing this wasn't a very strange thing. What was strange about it was the fact that he was doing it. Their leader, their teacher, their master, this great rabbi, the man that everybody knew, the most famous person they knew in the entire world, was getting down on his knees and washing their feet. That was what was confusing about it. I was trying to think of like a relevant example. I'm telling you, it's just a very not culturally relevant thing. But it was kind of like, let's say you and a bunch of your friends drove over to your other friend's house with your cars. And maybe this person is like really rich and really popular and very kind. But he goes out and hand washes all your cars. And you're like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just washing your cars. You know, they're dirty. That's kind of the only close example I can really come to this. It's very strange. But we're going to take a look at a couple different aspects of how Jesus went about this and really interesting things that they spoke to me deeply. This story is full of amazing, amazing examples. So the first thing we're going to look at is that in verse 1, Jesus knew that his hour had come. It says that Jesus knew his hour had come for him to leave the world and go to the Father. So here's the question. Or I guess the thing is, Jesus knew that he was going to die, pretty much. He knew that very soon he wasn't going to be with his disciples anymore. He was going to die. So then the question is, okay, what would you do if you knew that you were going to die tomorrow or maybe next week? What would you do if you knew you were going to die? And I think the first response, like I said, my first response is like, well, man, I just spend all my money. I would probably go eat whatever I want, do whatever I want. You know, I'm going to die tomorrow, so it doesn't really matter. I go charge up on my credit cards. I don't know. You know, just. But Jesus, his response was so different. It was like he knew he was going to die tomorrow. And if I were to paraphrase this, it's kind of weird. It's like Jesus said, he thought to himself, I'm going to die tomorrow. I should wash my friend's feet. What? That doesn't make sense. That's really weird, to be honest. Like, why would he do that? But there was something, clearly there's something more to this act, his last act, the last thing he knew he was going to be able to do with his friends. And this is what he chose to do. He took off his robe, put on an apron. I love that. Put on an apron, got a bowl of water, gets down on his knees, and gently washes his friend's feet. He's really trying to say something here. His last act, the last thing he would be remembered for besides his death on the cross, which is really an even greater form of what he's doing tonight with his friends. The second thing I want to look at is that in verse 2, he says he loved his companions. And actually, verse 3, he says, Jesus knew that the Father had put him in complete charge of everything, and that he had come from God, and that he was going back to God. So Jesus knew who he was. He had this, so first he realized, you know what, I'm going to die tomorrow, but I know that God has given me the authority, and that I have come from God, and that I'm going back to God. He had this moment of confidence, just remembering who he was as the Son of God. He was secure in his identity. And I think because he was so confident, it didn't matter if he got down on his knees. It didn't matter if he looked like a servant, because he knew who he was. And I guess the point here is that secure people, people who are sure of themselves, are the first to go serve other people. If you're struggling with who you are, if you know, if there's times where I'm just like not feeling myself and I'm just not sure, I don't really want to be around other people. You know, I can't even figure out who I am. I'm trying to, you know, and culturally it feels like we need to always try to prove ourselves. But Jesus didn't care about any of that. He knew that he was going to God. He knew that he had control, and he was so willing to get down and look. To be honest, he kind of looked stupid. I mean, why was he doing that? It doesn't even make sense. But he did it anyway. He was willing to get dirty. My relevance to this is a lot of times when I'm doing ministry with younger teenagers or even kids, like young kids, I'm so excited to, I don't care what I look like, to be honest. I don't really care. I want to serve them. I want to love them. I'm not trying to prove myself. I just want to serve them and love them. Sometimes I look really dumb. I've done a lot of really stupid things for youth ministry. Trust me. You don't even want to hear me talk about it. But, you know, sometimes secure, if you are secure in yourself. And insecure people struggle to serve, but Jesus knew who he was. And I think that's a really good point to make here. A couple more. In verse 17, towards the end, Jesus says, if you understand what I'm telling you, act like it and you will be blessed. So I kind of paraphrase this as it's a blessing to bless, or you're blessed to bless. And Jesus was saying something, you know, he's saying like, at first Peter was like, what are you doing? He's like, I know you don't understand what I'm doing right now, but you'll understand in a little bit. But then he said, you know, and there's a lot to this, this is a great story, but he says, if you serve other people, if you're willing to be a servant of all, you will be blessed, you will live a blessed life. Now that's great, and I can just say that to you because Jesus said it, and I can believe it, and you should believe it because Jesus said it, but there's actually more for you to have with that, and I think this is so fantastic. This is why I love science. Science is like a huge passion of mine. I just love it. I really respect the scientific theory. I really respect the way that we are able to capture truth, and so I have a couple facts with you that I want to share with you about some science of kindness. And these are stats that I can give you the references if you'd care to know, but a lot of different organizations have done studies of kindness, and they've studied the effects of kindness on your body and also in a society. And so a lot of the different studies agree on these statistics. The numbers may vary, but the general principles are true. So kindness stimulates the production of serotonin in your brain. Serotonin, if you don't know, helps heal your wounds, it calms you down, and it makes you happy. The serotonin is also boosted in the person who's doing the kind act and the person receiving it, and also the people watching. They've studied that people even witnessing an act of kindness, there's a production boost of serotonin in your brain. So that's just crazy. It also encourages the production of endorphins. If you don't know, endorphins are the brain's natural painkiller. They're 3 times more powerful than morphine. That's crazy. So people who are kind, they heal faster, they're calmer, they're happier, and they don't feel as much pain. This is crazy. Another thing, it produces oxytocin in your system. Oxytocin, it promotes social bonding. It also calms you down. It increases your trust with people, and it strengthens your immune system. So people who are kind, they heal faster, they're calmer, they're happier, they feel less pain, they have better relationships, They have increased trust, and they don't get sick as often. All right, there's one more. This is crazy. People who have a compassionate heart are found to have 2 times as much DHA, which is a compound in your body that actually slows down the aging of cells. So these people who are compassionate are aging slower. They also have found that people who are compassionate have 23% less cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So they're aging slower and they're less stressed. So Jesus said, if you do these things, if you serve one another as I have served you, you will be blessed. I believe him. Not because of science, but because Jesus said it. But I can tell you, science, side note, really quick side note, I believe that if your perspective is right about who God is, then science will always prove him. But if your perspective is wrong about who God is, science will always have a conflict. But science always proves God. And I think this is just a small example. You know, it's just a tiny little example where science is always proving who God is and what he says. And I believe that if you are kind, if we can learn to serve one another, all of those things are true. All of those things. Heal faster, calmer, happier. You get sick less. You feel less pain. You age slower. That's just crazy. I couldn't make those promises to you, but it's true. You're blessed to bless. I love that. One last one I want to look at from this scripture is in verse 8. Peter says, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answers him. He says, you don't understand what I'm doing, Peter, but you'll understand. But Peter says, no, like, you're not going to wash my feet. I'm not going to let you. But Jesus says, if I don't wash you, then you have no part of me. And honestly, I have to find this humorous. I love this dialogue between him and Peter. Peter's just the funniest disciple. But he says, you're not going to wash my feet. And Jesus says, no, Peter, you don't understand. If I don't wash your feet, then you don't have any part of what I'm doing. So Peter is like, oh, well, then you should wash my whole body. And Jesus, I know he said this with a smile on his face. I'm telling you, I know it. He says, Peter, if you took a shower this morning, I don't need to wash your body. This isn't about me cleaning you. This is about me showing you something. What was he showing Peter? You know, it's clear to me, honestly, it's clear to me this was about more than Peter's feet being clean. This is clearly a demonstration of something far more important to Jesus. It's his last act on earth with his friends. So there's something to understand here, but what is it? I've kind of paraphrased this last one. It's serve and be served. So a lot of the times we may focus on serving, and we should. We really need to serve one another. It's very important for us to serve one another in all the different forms that can come along with service. But we also need to learn how to be served. And I think a lot of people really struggle with this concept, and part of it's pride. Jesus died on the cross for you. He bled and died and suffered for you because you're not good enough, because you're a sinner. Are we willing to accept that truth? I think a lot of people aren't. You know, we don't want to believe that somebody had to get crucified for me. Not only do I not want to feel like I'm so bad that somebody had to die for me and bleed for me, but I also, like, I don't know if I'm even worth that. I don't really want that. I don't really, you know what? I don't think I'm all that bad that somebody had to get crucified so that I could be what? Happy, free, forgiven? I can handle that. You know, I can be happy, I can be all that by myself. I don't need some Jesus sacrifice for my life. That's what's happening. People will struggle with that. They don't want to receive Jesus' service. Why do I need to receive his service for me? Well, I don't know, but Jesus says something pretty harsh. He says, if I don't wash you, you have no part of what I'm doing. That is a harsh word. And you know how Peter responded? He's like, whoa, oh my gosh. And just do the whole thing. Like, I want it all. Bring it on. Serve me, Jesus. Serve me. That's a weird thing to say, really. Jesus, I accept your service from me. Jesus, you can wash my feet. I will let you wash my feet. That's hard. It's hard. The greatest, the God, the perfect Jesus, I'm going to let him, while I sit down, and do nothing. He's going to wash my feet. Take it all away from me without me doing anything. Why can't I do something? I'll wash my hands. He's like, no, no. I will do it. That's a tough thing to swallow. But I think it's so important for us to understand that. That's the harsher side of it, the reality. But on the other hand, learning how to be served is also a very important aspect of kindness. Kind of like gratitude. Like if you go to a restaurant and you have a server, sometimes we get frustrated with our servers, don't we? We're like, oh, they're the worst servers. I can't handle it. Have you ever thought about maybe you're bad at being served? That's possible. You could be making it very difficult to receive service. And I have witnessed this. There's some comical incidences that me and Katie have had at restaurants that are hilarious to watch, but also very sad. People can't understand that they are being a bad receiver. But we do that all the time. In closing, I think we can end on that. Just thinking, you know, Jesus wants to serve us. We have no part in him if we can't receive his service for us. He did the greatest act of all. And the reality is, you are in need of his sacrifice. You need his blood and his death on the cross to redeem you. So are we willing to accept that? A commitment to Christ doesn't mean that you're making a commitment to him. That's a touchy. It means that you're accepting God's commitment to you. He's faithful to you, and he is never gonna fail you. Are you willing to receive that commitment, accept that commitment from Christ? He wants to wash your feet. That's crazy. I'm going to close in some prayer, and then we'll have some worship. You just bow your heads with me. Jesus, it's hard. It's not easy. My natural instinct is to pull away from you. But I have to realize that I need to let you wash me if I want to have a part in you. I need your service in my life. Help me be a recipient of your love and your forgiveness and your sacrifice. Help me receive it. Just rid my pride, God. Allow me to know that I need you. Wash me, God. You demonstrated that to your friends. I accept it, Jesus. I accept it. If there's anyone in here that hasn't accepted that gift that you've given, that we just accept it today. We accept your commitment to love us. Good. Thank you.
Man, Paul, good word, man. All right, let's stand up. You know, that's really a good word, Paul. I just feel like the Holy Spirit is really stirring in some of your hearts right now. And we're going to enter into worship, but I just want you to be real sensitive to what the Holy Spirit's saying to you. And as we close out, we're going to have some time for ministry, but I truly believe the Holy Spirit's stirring in some of your hearts here this morning. So let's have our ushers come forward. We'll pray for our offering, and then we'll go into worship.
You knock on the door of my heart, and I will answer you. I will answer you. You make me a covenant. kind of love, and I will walk with you. I will walk with you. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid anymore. Your love has made a way. We say yes, God. We accept the invitation to your love. Say yes, God, you and you alone can have it all. You lead me to waters that are calm, and I will follow you. I will follow you. You're dancing and singing over us, and I will dance with you. I will dance with you. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid anymore. Your love has made a way. We say yes, God. We accept the invitation to my mind. I've got no more excuses, so we open the door.